Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of the Colorectal Quiz. This is Laura Tiusava from Children's National in Washington, D.C., and I'm joined today by Drs. Mark Levitt and Dr. Jason Frischer, and we're going to try something new to introduce our guest for today.
Today, we're doing something fun. We have a mystery guest. So this is a surgeon who hails from originally Lima, Peru, who speaks with a beautiful Spanish accent, who trained in Pittsburgh and sports a very cool beard on many days, and has unique colorectal expertise, both from his time at Pittsburgh and now where he's currently working. And he works in a city very, very south and east. Can you guess who that is?
So let me get this. Your hints to me are, you said he had a beard, so I'm guessing it's a male. Trained in Pittsburgh, obviously has a strong interest for one of the best fields in all of medicine, pediatric colorectal. Is in a southern, maybe one of the most southern cities on the east side of the United States. So we're in Miami.
That's right. You got it. And his name is Juan Callisto. Juan, thank you for joining us. It's a great honor. Juan has brought us a very interesting case today. We talked a little bit about a similar subject, but this is going to delve into a little bit more of the surgical aspects, and maybe we'll just have Juan present the case. Go for it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for having me. The case we have today is that of a newborn with an anorectal malformation and a Mullerian anomaly. We're going to talk about a term baby girl with no anal opening.
This is when I jump in real quick, listeners, and remind you to download the Stay Current app. It gives you access to not only this podcast, but tons of pediatric surgery resources. And if you listen to this podcast on the app, then you can see the pictures associated that Dr. Callisto is going to start referencing now.
In this perineum, you can see that there are only two openings, an opening that appears to be a urethra with a catheter in place. And there's another opening at the fourchette level that corresponds to a rectal fistula in this case.
All right. So to use that schema of one hole, two hole, three hole, this is a two hole scenario with what looks like a normal urethra and a hole in the vestibule fourchette area and clearly nothing in between. What could this be? It's certainly not a cloaca because the urethra is in normal position. The patient certainly has imperforate anus. So I would say there's two options here. One, this could be a vestibular fistula with distal vaginal atresia and a normal urethra, or this could be a urogenital sinus. The urethra in the vagina could be coming out of the single orifice with a vestibular fistula. And that is exceedingly rare, and I would call that some cloacal variant of some sort.
I think a lot of us have seen a vestibular fistula with absent vagina or a distal atresia of the vagina. But you're saying this could also be a urogenital sinus.
Well, think about it. You have an anorectal malformation, and you see where the rectum is, and there's another hole, and you don't know where the vagina is, and you have to be worried about the possibility, although exceedingly rare, that the single hole the urine is coming out of is connected to a vagina. I would say if I was a betting man, both are very rare, but the less rare one would be vestibular fistula with distal vaginal atresia. And I think to confirm that, you actually need to sort of understand what is the vaginal anatomy. And one option would be to do a cystoscopy. And the other option is to look from the inside, i.e. laparoscopy. So Juan, what a fascinating situation. I've seen this happen, honestly, where a partner has planned to do a vestibular fistula repair. And under the good lighting in the OR, they say, hold on a second. I thought there were three holes, but it looks like there's only two.
So for this particular case, Dr. Callisto, how did you proceed?
This patient had a colostomy performed with a plan for a later reconstruction. We did obtain some imaging. We wanted to know the sacral ratio on the patient. It was 0.8, good sacral ratio. There was no defect in the sacrum. There was no hemisacrum. The spine was normal by ultrasound. And we performed an ultrasound and MRI of the internal genitalia, and we found absence of the uterus and adnexa on both studies, ultrasounds and MRI.
So Hold on, that's also very interesting. So the ultrasound found nothing, including the absence of ovaries, which I am seriously questioning the missing ovaries on ultrasound. And MRI in a baby this small is usually pretty useless because nothing's going to be dilated. I actually have seen a situation where there was distal vaginal atresia and the maternal hormones had allowed the baby to menstruate essentially and have no egress of menstrual flow. But that is, it's pretty rare that leads to, you know, menses, essentially a hematometrocolpo. So ultrasound, I trust that.
The timing, Juan, I'm curious the timing of this compared to when the baby was born, because just what Mark is alluding to, and again, we've discussed this on a prior podcast with our guest gynecologist, are maternal hormones on board or not? Because as you get further and further away from maternal hormones being on board, I think it gets harder and harder for cross-sectional imaging to demonstrate anything at this young age.
Yes. In this case, these studies were done when the baby was about 5-6 months of age, prior to the reconstruction. And that's a great point, because it would be really rare for this child not to have ovaries.
It's rare for them not to have ovaries. It's not rare at all for an ultrasound not to see ovaries.
Exactly.
So I was going to ask, when you're planning to take a child like this to the operating room, would you do the cystoscopy, vaginoscopy at a prior setting, at the start of the setting for the reconstruction?
Juan said he's going to do laparoscopy, and I like that a lot because that sort of gives you all the information. First of all, it tells you that you're not dealing with a urogenital sinus because you can see the Mullerian anatomy. I think it's really important to know the spectrum here. Even though this condition is rare, there's essentially three scenarios. The most common is you look in and you don't see anything. Except for ovaries and some fallopian tubes and nothing in the middle, no uterus and no upper vagina. That's the most common. And that looks a lot like Meyer-Rokitansky-Hustar-Hauser syndrome, but that's not what this is, because that is a normal anus situation, but it looks a lot like that anatomy, meaning there's no Mullerian structures. However, you need to be prepared that there is some anatomy. The more common after nothing is an upper vagina and no lower vagina. So a vaginal atresia with an upper vagina that's sitting there, but not really big enough to reach. And the least common would be a very, very good vagina that's atretic at the very distal extent. So one thing that's really important to remember is you don't want to do any vaginal surgery until you know what is the intra-abdominal vaginal anatomy. Because in theory, even though it's rare, a patient could have a vaginal pull-through and use their native vagina. And I've seen situations where the surgeon didn't know and tried to solve the vaginal anatomy posterior sagittally and missed the fact that there was an abdominal vagina that could have been pulled through. So I think what you did was very wise, and that is to define everything laparoscopically and then proceed with a repair for rectum, of course, and then we got to figure out what to do about the vagina, which is really the essence of this case. So you found ovaries, as expected. You found some little fallopian tubes attached to them. And then there is nothing. They were not connected to anything. And there was no uterus and no upper vagina. So the the vaginal anatomy will be for sexual purposes only. We have to keep that in mind as we make a plan. So what did you do?
In this case, we performed a reconstruction of the vagina. We use the rectal fistula as a new vagina, left it in place, and perform an introitoplasty to create an introitus that was a little wide. And we use the proximal rectum to perform our anoplasty.
This is the essence of the case right here. Well, the true essence is recognizing the situation and then deciding how to reconstruct. Mark, any other options or thoughts?
The other thing to mention is that you have a vestibular fistula, so there is egress of stool. So there's no urgency to doing the next step. The one thing to keep in mind is there are some great advantages to dealing with the vagina now because you're dissecting the rectum and potentially the perineal body. In the future, if you're going to deal with the vagina, that's a scarred area. But I will tell you, nowadays, I would judge the decision about the vagina based on the introitus. And if it's a good introitus that is potentially dilatable, I wouldn't do anything to the vagina at this stage in life. Because that is a very effective way to get a vagina, you know, 20 years from now. And our gynecologist would tell you they would much prefer that over a bowel neovagina. However, many of these patients have a very diminutive introitus, and the vestibule is taken up by rectum. It's not really a dilatable situation, although you really don't know what it's going to look like in, you know, 15 to 20 years. And then you have to talk about other options. I will tell you today, if the introitus looked reasonable, I would do nothing to the vagina and dilate, particularly in this circumstance, if there was no vagina. If there was a vagina identified on laparoscopy, I would pull that through. And then the other scenario is there's an upper vagina that's blind ending. I can tell you, if you asked me this question 5 years ago, I probably would have done a neovagina and then anastomosed it to the upper vagina. Today, I would say, leave everything alone. Let the patient go to puberty, and then probably enlarge, that vagina would probably be enlarged. And then you could pull through the native vagina. And I have GYN, you know, people sitting on my shoulders telling me how to be. Now, in this particular case, you have a vestibular fistula that's exactly where the introitus ought to be, and a pretty diminutive introitus. So I can understand, Juan, why you chose this route, but I do want everyone to recognize that there is no rush. One thing we didn't mention, Juan, I understand you did a colostomy in this case. Jason, do you think the patient needs a colostomy?
You know, every situation, I think it's a safe answer to say you could do a colostomy. I don't think there's a wrong to it, although we all know ostomies come with a cost. That being said, this is the type of situation where you should be able to, because it looked like that fistula is very visible and could teach the family to dilate. And then, like Mark said, either just do a posterior sagittal anoplasty and bring the anus to the proper position in the proper timing, whatever is comfortable for the surgeon, and leave the vaginal reconstruction for a later time. I personally have sort of slowly shifted to not replacing vaginas as early as we used to in the past. That being said, when I look at this case, I have an algorithm where it's really nice to use the fistula as the vagina. It's already located there, and the distal rectum as your graft. My concern with that, no proof, just concern, is that the teaching is if you use the distal rectum as your graft, that distal rectum helps with continence. And we take away potentially some bowel control using that distal rectum as your vaginal graft. So for me, I look at the potential for bowel control. And this patient, I think, had a sacral ratio of 0.8. and no tethered cord in a vestibular fistula with normal, it didn't sound like any urologic abnormalities. And so I probably would have used a different graft in this case for reconstruction, a more proximal, you know, left colon or sigmoid colon, whatever I found to reach to come down there, and then pulled through the distal rectum with no data to prove that that's better. But just sort of my teaching of the distal rectum potentially helps with continence. What are you guys' thoughts on that? I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying this is right or wrong.
This concept that the distal rectum is the be-all and end-all for continence in a patient with excellent sphincters and a normal spine and a normal sacrum, maybe the rectum that's, you know, 6 centimeters above is going to work. I know that sounds a little radical, but we do not know. We do not know the answer to that question. I have tended to do what Jason said, and that is if the patient has good potential for bowel control, I leave rectum as rectum, and neovagina made from small bowel or colon, or as we mentioned, dilations alone. And we simply do not know the truth about this matter of whether the rectum has to be rectum. And from a practical point of view and a technical point of view, this was a very elegant way to solve both problems purely posterior sagittally, particularly because you knew already that this vagina was for sexual purposes only, as there were no Mullerian structures inside.
Mark, I couldn't agree with you more, 100%. And take away if there was a colostomy, and let's say we did dilations, using the fistula or the distal rectum as your vaginal graft, that saves you an anastomosis too. So there's a lot of nuances and questions of what to use. So, yeah. And I think we were both very clear. There is no data to support which graft will improve functional outcome at all. These are old dogma and thoughts, but we need to challenge these thoughts. And
I will tell you, if I had to choose a vaginal graft in a case of a patient who has a colostomy, my personal preference would be to use the colostomy site itself, because that represents essentially the left colon, which is a beautiful piece of bowel, has a great pedicleized mesentery. You can move that colon to the neck for the esophagus and to the vagina for neovagina very easily. And what's really nice about that is then you just open a slightly more proximal colostomy and then do your third stage of your colostomy closure, if that's the way you're going to do it. Alternatively, you could do the rectal repair and then you do your colostomy closure. And at the time of your colostomy closure, you pull through the little piece of proximal colostomy and do your anastomosis behind that. The disadvantage of that, of course, is you've already dissected the perineal body. One thing I do want to mention that I think is important is in the case of no Mullerian anatomy, occasionally you find little nubs of hemiuteri that are clearly not useful. I would leave those in. There's no rush to take those out at this time. I would take one out if the other side was patent. If the other side was patent and you were going to do a vaginal pull through, now's a good, and that's what we did in our case. We had a laparoscopic mobilization of the right side. We removed the Mullerian remnant of the left side. And also on that Mullerian remnant side, take out the fallopian tube and preserve the blood supply to the ovary. Amazingly, some ovarian cancers develop in the tube, and removing the tube has value in reducing that child's risk of ovarian cancer if you have a Mullerian remnant to resect. In this particular case, you just didn't touch the abdomen. Do you have little Mullerian remnants, or you had literally nothing?
We had two normal ovaries and fallopian tubes.
And no bubble that looks like, so therefore you're fine. But if you had little bubbles on both sides, it didn't look like they had a lumen.
Mm-hmm. They did not.
I think our gynecologist would advise us to not touch them. And then 6 months after telarche, after breast budding, to get an ultrasound and make sure nothing's dilating up. And at that point, decide whether those structures can be left in or removed.
I love it because there's so many different options. Just like you said, Mark, you can go into this case, you have to know your options, you have to know what's available and make decisions and what you think is the best reconstruction for the patient. So this was awesome, Juan.
One thing to mention for completion's sake is that we've mentioned this many times before, anorectal malformations in females, you need to know the gynecologic anatomy. You need to at least look into the introitus, if not vaginoscope, a vestibular fistula. and the incidence of a vaginal septum is about 5%, and the incidence of distal vaginal atresia is a little bit close, a little bit under 1%. It's not nothing. And very rarely there are Müllerian anomalies associated with a perineal fistula. But our routine is to always get a gynecologist involved in any of our ARM females and to take every opportunity we have in the OR to be certain that we know the introital anatomy, make sure you're not leaving behind a septum, and any opportunity to look inside the abdomen, i.e. colostomy creation, colostomy closure, laparoscopic Malone, take a look at the Müllerian structures.
I think that last bit really summarizes the importance of getting the gynecology team involved, always being on the lookout for those Müllerian structures. Dr. Levitt, Dr. Frischer, Dr. Callisto, thank you so much for today's episode. And listeners, you know this would not be a full episode of the colorectal quiz without a joke. So Dr. Frischer, go ahead.
So Mark and I used to work together. His office was right next to mine, and I'd always be telling jokes. And he was always laughed at my jokes, always. I was like so proud of myself that I was able to get Mark to laugh. But since the pandemic, and he never laughs at my jokes anymore when we're on Zoom. And I asked him, why have you stopped laughing at my jokes since we're on Zoom? And he replied, because your jokes aren't remotely funny.
I'm laughing. I'm laughing right now on Zoom.
Thank you all for joining us, and we hope you join us next time for another episode of the Colorectal Quiz. This is Laura Tiusava from Children's National. Until next time.